If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this selection from Late Night with Seth Meyers, airing weeknights at 12:35, 11:35 Central on NBC, right after The Tonight Show.
Our first guest tonight is an Emmy Award-winning broadcaster and a best-selling author who hosts The Rachel Maddow Show, weeknights at 9 on MSNBC. Please welcome back to the show our friend Rachel Maddow. Very nice kicks.
Festive.
Very colorful kicks.
Thank you very much. I can find my feet in a dark bar.
That's very good. That's right. That's a very helpful thing.
Yeah.
I want to talk, obviously, about everything that's going on in the world right now, but I'm always fascinated by how someone like you gets into this world that you're in now. Mm. Sort of journalism, but also you have a very strong point of view. And when you were in high school, you were taking a stand for stuff even back then.
Can't believe you're using this against me.
I'm not using it against you.
It is. What's weird is that, like, you think that there are things that happen in your life that will never ever resonate ever again. They
sure.
were one-off. They were standalone things. They will never ever be important. And then all of a sudden, like, white supremacism is really popular again in American politics.
Yeah.
And like white nationalists and neo-Nazi groups are like feeling their oats.
It's so funny. It is true. People are talking about now, like, ballroom dancing is back.
I know,
like,
exactly.
This isn't a thing.
You know, that one neo-Nazi group, they're dropping the swastika because they want to be more, you know. So when I was growing up in the Bay Area in California, people think of the Bay Area as very liberal. I was, like, in the one corner of the Bay Area that had, like, a Klan chapter. And we had racist skinhead groups, these, like, white Aryan resistance skinhead groups and stuff, used to recruit at my high school. And so the very first, like a
folding table and flyers,
like guys in Doc Martens with white laces and no hair coming around and like
gotcha.
And there were like white power concerts and stuff. And me and my friends, the first activism I ever did is that we put up flyers around town that were rude, and the police took them down immediately. That were mean to the racist skinheads, and then we went.
How mean do you have to be to racist skinheads to get it taken down?
We thought that the racist skinheads should be kicked out of our school, you know, but they thought that our flyer should be taken down because they had swear words.
Oh, gotcha.
So
okay.
It wasn't a good move. We were like 15, and we thought it was awesome.
Right?
It didn't work. You can't put that up in the Safeway if it has an F word on it.
Yeah.
You idiot.
No matter what your position
exactly.
is.
Exactly. You might be against racism, but that's obscene.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that didn't work. But then we went to, there were also anti-racist skinhead groups. This is like in the 80s, right? This is another universe. None of you were alive.
So wait, there were good skinheads?
There were good skinheads and bad skinheads. And we went to a meeting of the good skinheads and said, please, would you go beat up the bad skinheads?
Oh, wow.
In our town. We tried to organize good versus bad skinhead wars.
Got it.
Around my high school. So that was my first activism. And I thought that would never, ever be relevant again. And now the Nazis are back.
Yeah, there you go.
Awesome.
Well, it takes their cycles. They're like cicadas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They just come
back.
They've
been underground since 17 years, pretty much.
So, you know, we obviously deal with it to a much smaller degree on this show, but covering Donald Trump is interesting, even in this transition period, because every part of it is unprecedented.
Yeah.
And there is no, it doesn't seem like there's any way to sort of harken back to historical example, certainly in this country, for what he's doing. How have you been approaching it day to day?
It's a weird challenge, because you think in the abstract, if something happens that has never happened before, there's some political phenomenon that's like nothing we've ever seen, you'd think that would be fascinating, riveting, everybody be paying attention to it. But there's actually something about it being unprecedented that makes it harder to understand. Because the way we understand things is like, look, the last time we did this as a country, remember how that turned out? You can't do that with Trump because he really is doing stuff that nobody's ever done. And it makes it harder to understand the importance of some of it. And so, I mean, for me, it's exciting because it's a storytelling challenge. But it does mean you have to, like, find reference points you wouldn't expect. Like, last night I did this whole riff on, like, the god of wine had a friend who was half a goat. And the half-goat friend, like, you have to find parallels somewhere. Sometimes it's in history of other countries, and sometimes it's made up
stuff.
It's
myth. It's from myth.
Yeah.
You have talked a lot. I think a lot of people were drawn to Donald Trump because he is a businessman. He gives off this air of being a successful businessman. Yeah. People are thinking that he will be able to do that for this country. Mm. You've been talking a lot about the kind of businessman he is and how it might not necessarily elevate our country, but it might work against our country because he has known throughout his career to enrich himself. That has been, and that's a thing that I think a lot of people think is great about him, is his self-enrichment. But now it's a conflict of interest. Can you talk about that a little?
Well, it's in the same way that things are harder to grok because they're unprecedented. Like, we've never had a president in the modern era who hasn't showed us his tax returns. We've never had a president who had active financial investments where he could make decisions as a president that would enrich himself. But that's happening now. It's not just a threat. I mean, it is happening now. And it's I think that to a certain extent, we're going to have to get used to the fact that Donald Trump fans like that he's a businessman, and they like that he's made himself very rich, and so maybe they're expecting him to take decisions that are going to enrich himself further as president.
But talk about sort of his golf courses in Scotland and just using that as an example of how it could work against for him, but against us.
I think that that finally will be the sort of thing that maybe makes stuff sink in. Because, like, you were talking about how he's very afraid of windmills.
He doesn't like windmills.
He doesn't like windmills.
No.
He's very, like, they're his boogeyman.
Yeah, wind is his kryptonite.
When he wakes up sweating in the night, he's like, is it spinning?
He's
is
like,
it
is there a windmill here? And she's like, no, Donald, it's the air conditioner.
Yes.
It's okay. Exactly. Go back to bed.
Are the birds all right? Yeah. So he's very afraid of windmills. They terrify him. There are windmills that were near his golf course in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't like the windmills. He can't stop talking about the windmills. He's fixated on them. While talking to British politicians after he won the presidency, he brought up the windmills to them. It was like, thank you for the congratulations. You know, we really shouldn't have those windmills by my golf course. And that's hilarious if you think of it as just his phobia. But now that he's going to be president, I mean, this seems weird, but, you know, Scotland could come to him, the UK could come to him and been like, you know, listen, Donald, we know you really care about the windmills and you think that's a very important thing for your business. We'll get rid of the windmills if you do this thing for our country, which the United States doesn't want to do. It's not good for the country, but we want that from you as president and we'll give you this private benefit instead. That kind of transactional stuff is already a problem. The guy who's building, the company that's building his Trump towers in Turkey, the president of Turkey just arrested an executive from that company. That's a really important business project for Donald Trump. Turkey can now come and say, you want to let that executive out of prison? Do a little something for us in terms of U.S. policy. So it puts him in a position of choosing himself over the interests of the United States of America. And whether or not you care that he's going to get rich off of all of our backs, the fact that he is going to be in a position where people can leverage the country against his own interest is not good.
So this is a time of great unease for liberals. Do you have an optimism for them? Any optimism?
I have bright red shoes, which is very festive. I have a family I love and nice dogs.
How about this?
Yeah.
Because I feel... I'll push you down an optimistic path, and you can decide if you want to continue on.
All right, digging in my heels.
You know, obviously there was this great enthusiasm for a Bernie Sanders campaign. Now, obviously, that came up short, but this was a large group of people who, again, a message that's very far away, far afield of what Donald Trump's message is right now. And obviously, popular vote-wise, I know that doesn't matter, and I know that's not how we pick our president. But if those people, is there some way to galvanize what happened here? Do you think?
Yes. Yes. This is apocryphal. This is fake. But people always say that, you know, it's an ancient Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. I've always felt like it's a good fake ancient Chinese curse. That in politics, you will be blessed with enemies who are cartoonishly evil.
Yeah.
Yes. Let that be a blessing to you. Let this clarity of this new era be a blessing to you. I think that particularly if you're on the liberal side of the spectrum or if you are scared about Donald Trump, your life just got different. Like, you've got a different fight of your life than you thought you were going to have. You're going to have to do different work than you thought you were going to do. And whatever this administration is going to cook up is going to pose all sorts of fascinating challenges we were not expecting, and working on that stuff is going to be unifying because he's planning to govern from who he's appointing. He seems to be planning from governing from a really, really out there place, and I think that's going to make for a very interesting time sort of in the opposition, kind of in the resistance.
You mentioned cartoonish. One thing that I have found, because it does seem like something from a superhero movie, is that the way the treatment of people like Mitt Romney, where he brings in Mitt Romney very publicly, gets him to go out to dinner with him, takes him out to pictures, and then doesn't give him the job that they were meeting for. Yeah. Do you think that is a place that he's being vengeful for to the Never Trump Republicans? Yeah, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Romney thing was never going to happen, right? Like, what's the one thing that Romney said during his 2012 campaign that anybody remembers other than the 47%? It was when he said, our number one geopolitical foe is Trump's daddy, is Russia.
Yeah.
Like, if you think that's our number one geopolitical foe in the world, you're not going to be Trump's Secretary of State. Trump will have us speaking Russian,
yeah,
right? This is not, you're
Do
not going to
pick
Romney.
Do you think Mitt Romney's getting enough credit about calling that out? Because that was sort of laughed off by President Obama at the time.
Yeah, he's like, it's not the 80s. It's not the Cold War.
But it turns out the cicadas are back.
And then Trump drags him out. I mean, I think it's in Trump's interest that he needs to make sure anybody who took a principled stand against Trump needs to now be brought before Trump to grovel, to get rid of anybody having any moral high ground against him. But yeah, I also think he likes watching people feel hurt and humiliated. So he dragged Romney out and made him do that and made him grovel, made him go eat frog's legs with him at a restaurant and have his picture taken and say it was nice.
And I bet.
And then he still rejected
it.
Do
you think he made Romney pay for that dinner? Because I bet he did. That would be the real burn.
I'm sure Trump is a guy who's like, oh, I forgot my wallet.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. It's always such a pleasure
to
see you. Rachel Maddow, everybody. The Rachel Maddow Show airs weeknights at 9 on MSNBC.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And if you like this podcast, please take a moment to leave us a rating and review. Thanks for listening.
When you're committed to raising the standard, you're bound to ruffle some feathers. At Happy Egg, we like to say we farm differently. But in reality, we produce eggs the way people used to. By partnering with local small family farmers who raise our happy hens on 8 or more acres. Because in our opinion, farming shouldn't be complicated. It should be happy. Choose happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.